Okay, we're starting here on the top of Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, five lines down. Gemara says, "How gavra damale lechavre?" The individual said to his friend, "Im es venina la laha ara, if I sell this land or this piece of land, lecham es venin la, I will sell it to you." So he says that I'm not intending to sell it right now, but if I change my mind or I feel like I'm going to sell it, then I'm giving you the right to purchase it. I will sell it to you. Azal zavna le'inish acharina. He went ahead and he sold it to another party. Amar Rav Yosef, kana kama. The original individual has the right to take the kinyan, and that the sale has to be reversed because he promised the first person that he would sell it to him if he sold the field. Amar le Abaye, v'halo pasok. They never came to an agreement on price. From this you can look in Rashi. Rashi makes it clear here, v'kanu mine mikinyan, that the original agreement had a kinyan on it. Without a kinyan, there's no gemira tadat. The oral commitment, just to say that when I sell this land, I'll sell it to you, it might be morally incumbent upon him to follow through on his word, but there's no legally binding agreement that is generated by the fact that he stated to his friend that if I sell the land, I will sell it to you. Nevertheless, if there is a kinyan that's involved here, that they create a kinyan over that matter, then it becomes a legally binding obligation. And that's why Rav Yosef says, you have a legally binding agreement, you have a kinyan, kana kama. The first person has the kinyan on the land, and he's the one who has the right to it. Abaye says that's not true, because they never agreed on price. Umana temra do echad lo pasak lo kana. How do I know when you don't agree on price? That means that you also haven't come to a conclusion. That's our Mishnah, like we saw yesterday. That's not. Someone who sells his wine to a non-Jew, pasak ad shelo madad. If he comes to an agreement on price before he measures out the wine, damav mutarim, then the monies that he receives are fine, because we don't assume that the yayin became yayin nesech until after it was out of the possession of the Jew. Madad ad shelo pasak. On the other hand, if he measures it out before they come to an agreement on price, damav asurim, then the monies are considered to be an exchange or hana from the yayin nesech, and in that case, the monies will be asur because there's no gemira tadat, there's no samcha date if they didn't come to an agreement on price. Because the person always thinks that it may be too expensive, and he's going to end up backing out of the transaction. So my havi Allah, so what's the din? When it says, my havi Allah, what do you mean what's the din? He just brought a Mishnah that's explicit, that we don't have an agreement on price, there is no kinyan. Kidam rinan. Like we just said, Dilma Chumra de Yayin Nesech Shaini. It says, no, maybe here it's a little different, because Yayin Nesech has its own unique dinim because of the severity of the dinim surrounding Yayin Nesech. So maybe you cannot extrapolate from Yayin Nesech to other areas of halacha. So because it's true by Yayin Nesech doesn't mean it's true by the acquisition of properties. So Tashma, Dama Rav Idi Baravin Uvda Hava Be Rav Chista. There was this incident, and it came up in the Beit Midrash of Rav Chista Be Rav Huna, and then it moved from the Beit Midrash of Rav Chista to Beit Midrash of Rav Huna, Upashte Meha, and they concluded this from the following Mishnah. It's not Mashach Chamarav Upo Alav. If he did a Kinyan Meshicha on the donkey drivers, his workers, Bechnisam Letoch Beito, and then they brought him into his house, Ben Pasak Ad Shelo Madad, whether they came to a conclusion on price before they measured it out, Ben Madad Ad Shelo Pasak, whether they measured it out before they came to price, Lo Kana, there is no Kinyan over here, Ushneim Yecholim Lachzor Ben, they can both back out of the transaction. The situation is a case where a person is bringing produce, he's bringing items with his donkeys and with his workers, and the donkeys are carrying them on their back, and the workers are carrying them on their shoulders, and then his friend does a kinyan mishicha, and then brings them into his house. What the Mishnah is telling you is that there is no kinyan mishicha over here, and the reason being, she'ein mishicha koneh b'bnei adam u'perot, kozman she'ein alai u'lo kana, that a person can make a kinyan mishicha on movable objects that don't have their own mind. He can't make a kinyan mishicha on workers with the intent of acquiring the items that they are carrying. If the fruits or the items or the produce are distinct from the people, then he can make a kinyan mishicha on those items. What he can't do is make a kinyan mishicha both on the person or on the item, while it's still in the possession or on the person that is carrying them. So therefore, his kinyan mishicha fails over here. On the other hand, pirkan veikinisan the beito, if they unloaded and then they brought him into his house, now you have a real kinyan mishicha, because the bringing of the produce or the items into his house is your classic case of kinyan mishicha. So before, where it failed is because the produce or the item didn't come in by itself. It was carried in by the seller's workers, by the seller's donkeys. It was still in possession of the seller, and it wasn't separate or distinct from his workers, his donkeys. Now you have a situation which they've unloaded the items, and now they're bringing them into his property. That's a kinyan mishicha. But pasak, gachalo madad, if they came to a conclusion on price, and then they start to measure it out, then you have no right of retraction. You are bound by the transaction. Madad, adshelo pasak. The other hand, if they measure it out before they've come to a conclusion on price, shnehem yecholim lachzor ben. Both of them can retract. Both of them can back out of the transaction. So this is clear evidence of the fact that even in the face of a kinyan, without agreement on price, the kinyan is not binding. Because over here you have a kinyan mishicha, which should be a binding kinyan, should lock in the transaction and force both parties to abide by the agreement between them. The problem is, you lack price. And if you lack price clarity, then we don't say there's any gemira tadar smicha tadad. The kinyan does not take on the force that you normally would expect from a kinyan, because the person in the back of their mind always thinks, he may just charge me too much, or the seller could be thinking, he may pay too little for it. In that case, there's no gemira tadad. That's the key element of any kinyan, is the kinyan demonstrates that we have come to a conclusion, and this is a finality to whatever we are doing. It's binding because it's an act that indicates that you have come to finality over this transaction, and we're going to now abide by whatever transaction, whatever agreement we came to. The problem is, when you don't have price, that's not true. And so therefore, it doesn't act in the way that you would expect the kinyan to act, because there's this factor that sits in the background that says that maybe not. And anytime you can say maybe not, there's no gemira tadat or smicha tadat in the kinyan. Based on this, then you would then could extrapolate to the case we had before. Even though he guaranteed to the person he would sell him the property if he sold the property, nevertheless, it's not a binding agreement. Even with the kinyan, because of the fact that there was no price discussed, and they never came to an agreement on price, that makes it that it's still open, and there's no gemira tadat, and he could sell it to another party without, quote-unquote, violating the agreement, because the agreement wasn't binding. How gavro, damar le lechavrei, im azvanina laha ara, if I sell this land, mizavanina lecha, I will sell it to you, b'mei azuze. So here we have kinyan, and we have price. Seemingly, this should be what you would expect to be in a binding agreement, because we have all the elements that you're looking for. We have kinyan, and we have price. Azal zavna l'ish achrina b'mei avesrim. You sold it to another party for 120. Amar of Kana, Kana Kama. So Kana says, look, we already went through this din. This is an extrapolation of the din that we saw before. But here you have the right elements, which is you have kinyan and you have price. Should be a binding agreement, and therefore the first one took possession of it. And you'll have to undo the sale to the second party and sell it to the first party. Matkiv lo Rav Yaakov Nar Pakud. Hai zuzei ansuhu. He was under duress because of the money. Behilchatuk Rav Yaakov Minar Pakud. And the halacha is like Rav Yaakov Minar Pakud. So the Gemara uses the terminology Yuzuzi Ansua a lot of times when it comes to someone who's desperate for liquidity or desperate for cash. Over here you could explain it that way, which is he just needs the money, he needs liquidity. And in general we believe, at least in the time of the Gemara, that people would not sell land unless they were under pressure, under duress. And the duress is what causes him to make this decision. I don't think that's the explanation of Zuzei Ansua over here, based on what Rashi says. Rashi says, Zesh naton lo mei v'esrim anso l'mokhra. This person was not intending to sell his land. He would have received 100 zuz for it. He had no interest in selling it. But someone came over and offered him 120. All of a sudden he says, okay, I didn't want to sell my land. Now I'm compelled to sell my land. This forced me to sell my land. Not in the sense of that he was forced under duress to do it, but it simulates duress because it changed his mind about the situation. You could be living in your house and say, I'll never sell that my house. I enjoy it. I love where I live. But at a certain point, there's a price that a person will say, I'll change my mind about that. I may make a different decision. And that's what's happening over here. The Zuzei Ansua is that the price made him think differently about the situation. And therefore, until you reach that threshold, he had no intention of selling it. And now Rashi says that he said to the other party that if I sell it at its fair price, or if I sell it at the price that we had agreed, then I'll sell it to you. He didn't sell it willingly. He was compelled to sell it. What you're saying happens to be a machloket rishonim. What happens if the first party is willing to match the price? So the Tosafot read says that once the price is raised by the second individual, he's the one that compelled the transaction, and he didn't give a first right of refusal to the other party except at fair market value or where he sold willingly. Okay, he wasn't selling willingly, and therefore the first party doesn't get it. The Raivad, on the other hand, says what you're saying, which is he granted him the right to buy it at fair value, but he also granted him the right of first refusal, which means if he's willing to match the price, then he should be able to get it, because even though he can make a claim that he was compelled because of the price to sell it, but if the other guy's willing to match it, then he would then be abiding, at least, we'll say, from a equitable and moral standpoint, by giving this person the opportunity to buy it at that price. You could see, based on the language of Rashi, that's not necessarily true, and that's probably what the Tosafot Darid was saying, which is that the agreement was, if I sold it willingly, I'll sell it to you. But as Rashi terms it over here, he's no longer selling it willingly. He's selling it because he was compelled to sell it. And therefore, the whole entire agreement falls apart because the agreement wasn't made about this situation or this circumstance. But that is a machloket rishonim as to whether he gets that first right of refusal, even though technically this is outside the bounds of what they agreed to. And we see here the Gemara paskens that the locha is like Rav Yaakov Minar Pokod. The first guy is not in possession of the property and that he can't sell it to the other party. So Amarle, if in the agreement of this transaction, similar type of setup as we've seen until now, he tells an individual, if I sell the property, I will sell it to you. They don't agree in price. There is a kinyan, but he makes the following statement. Amarle, kedeshaimi bitlato. Based on the price that would be set by a group of three assessors. So he doesn't set the price, but he sets the mechanism for determining the price. Afilu tre migotlato. In that case, they bring in three assessors, and even if two out of the three assessors agree on a price, that'll be sufficient. If he tells him, kid da amre bitata, like three assessors say, ad da amre bitata, then it would have to be until all three of them agree on price. So the difference being how he structures the mechanism. If the mechanism is kid da shaimi bitata, the way that three assessors say, then he's basically using a paradigm that exists already. That is the paradigm, we'll call it Beit Din, but it's the paradigm where you take three parties, and the idea being that it functions that two out of the three will determine the price because we go by the majority. The reason you picked an odd number is so that you can come to a conclusion based on two out of three making the decision, as well as that the unit of three is a known unit. This is a unit that's used in other places in halacha and other places in general with regards to adjudication and with regards to assessment. When he says, I'm going to sell it to you based on the assessment of three assessors, then that's fine. You use the normal way that three assessors work, and that goes by majority. So two would be sufficient. Then if he changes his language to say, kida amre bitlata, the way that three assessors say, then he's not trying to use it as a baiting or the normal way it's being used. He's specifying, I want three assessors to give us the price. And based on that price, we will sell it. Ad amri bitlata. Therefore, you have to wait until you have all three of them in agreement. Kedishaimi ba'arba. If he says the way that four of them will assess it, ad amri ba'arba, then you need to have all four of them in agreement. And certainly then, in a case where he says the way that four say, then you would have to have four of them do it. The reason being that four is not a number that we know of. It's not a paradigmatic number in terms of Beit Din. Once he moved to four, he's demonstrating that he does not want to relegate this to the normal process of assessment. He wants more assessors in here. If he wants more assessors, that means that he wants them all to come to an agreement and to assess it at the same price. in addition to the fact that he's using an even number. If he uses an even number, then he certainly doesn't think that we're going to vote by majority, because there's a possibility here you could come out with 2 versus 2. And then you could have a stalemate or a hung assessment, and based on that, you wouldn't get anywhere. So it must be that he wants a unanimous decision, and that's why he mentioned 4. And in that case, it doesn't matter if he says Kiddushaymi or Kiddamrei. It's clear in all these cases that this is a binding agreement. Even though they don't agree on price, if they agree on the mechanism for determining the price, that's the same thing as agreeing on price. Which means that the person is somech dat, that this transaction will go through, or he has gemirat dat with the kinyan, because the mechanism is in place. And that means whatever is determined then, that will be the price, and that will be the agreement between them. They've set in place such a mechanism that they will rely on that to may have gemirat dat or smichat dat now. And this will be a binding agreement. Now, kiddushaymi bitlato, if he set up the transaction in a way that he said that based on 3 assessors, so that again we said 2 out of 3 would be sufficient, v'adu tlato b'shamua. And sure enough, 3 came along and assessed it. Vamrale, there's a question here about the girsa of idach, which actually has implications as to whom is speaking over here. Vamrale idach, here it would sound like the buyer is saying, leitu tlata achrino. Let's bring 3 other people, dekim lehutfei, that are better at assessing things. If you leave out the word idach, then it would be v'amrale, would be the mocher, who's speaking in all the cases before, it would be the mocher saying, let us bring 3 other assessors. Now what's not clear from the Gemara over here is how were the first 3 assessors chosen. That's never made clear in the Gemara. It's not clear whether they had a consensus between them, the buyer and the seller, or, depending on which girsa you have, was it unilaterally one of the buyers or sellers went ahead and chose assessors who were professional assessors, and that's the case that we have here? None of that's made clear. But what the question is does the other party have a right to say, these assessors don't know what they're talking about, let's get another set of assessors in here? So Amar Papa, Dina Hudmake. Papa says, he's justified in doing that. Why can't he ask for another set of assessors? Mati Vla Ravuna, Breda Rav Yeshua, Mimai, Dahane Kim Lehu Tvei. How do you know that the second set of assessors are going to be any better or are more professional than the first set? Domahane Kim Lehu Tvei. Maybe the original assessors are better at this. And how can you come in and bring in somebody and say they're more professional than the first? They know better than the first. What gives you the right to say that? Or where do you have any indication that that's the case? Hilchatok Rav Huna Breid Yeshua. And the Gemara paskins halacha like Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua, which means that you don't have a right to question the authority of the assessors. Now again, the Gemara never specifies how the first set of assessors were picked, because that would make a difference over here. If one party picked the assessors, then it would be hard to argue that the other party doesn't have some right to bring in his set of assessors. So that's why I think that you would have to argue that the first set of assessors was agreed upon by both parties. But once you do that, then you can't come back and say, oh, I agreed to it, now I'm not. I'm backing out of it. These assessors don't know what they're talking about. I got to bring in another set of assessors. In addition, if they're licensed and there's some sort of professional organization that gives licensing to these assessors, then it'd also be hard to argue, even if one of them picked the assessors, it would be hard to argue that he didn't do a proper job when he picked these assessors. Do I think that latter scenario that I laid out is more likely, only because if both parties agreed to the assessment and the assessors up front, it's very hard to see even Rav Papa arguing that you could bring in new assessors. So I think that it might be that these were professionals picked by one of the parties. Now the other party is starting to question them. What Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua says is, once you've picked people that are professionals, you can't start questioning professionals, because that's an endless game. How do you know these are better? Bring in new ones, new ones, new ones. You're never going to get anywhere. If you do it with the proper licensing and the proper assessors, then that is a binding price based on their agreement. You have to abide by whatever the assessors come by. You can't start saying, let's bring in new assessors. All right, next Mishnah. Natalat ha-mashbech u'madad ha-toktzlo chito shalobay kochavim. He took a funnel, and now he's pouring the wine through the funnel into the flask of the Oved Kochavim. V'chazar u'madad ha-toktzlo chito shal Yisrael. And then he uses the same funnel to put wine into the Jews' flask. Im yoshpo akavat yayin, if it has remnants of wine in it, asur, then it's problematic. Now, this is the girsa of Rashi, which is akavat with a kaf, which is from the word ikuv, and something that we saw before in the Gemara, where there were little drops of wine that were left behind. The funnel still has wine in it from the previous filling, so now you go to the next filling, filling up the juice flask, and the wine from the original filling, meaning the one filled with kuchavim, is still in there. If you look on the Mesoda Shas, he says, Ubishami ita akavat bekuf. That with a kuf, but rather a kuf. And then he says, look in the Tosafot Yom Tov, but that explanation is from the word akuva or akuv, which means a residue or a remnant of. So it's not that there's actually wine in there, but either the flavor or there's some moisture left from the wine that's in there. You didn't clean it out. You didn't dry out the funnel, but not that there's actually drops of wine that are in there. Ame'are mikli el kli. Someone is pouring from one utensil to another utensil. Et she'ira mimenu mutar. The kli that he's pouring from is fine. Et she'ira l'tocho asur. The one he's pouring into is problematic. And obviously, we have to understand what the issue is, but we have to assume that there's something wrong, or there's yayin nesech in the lower kli, or that a goy is one who is pouring it, and since he's pouring it, he has kocho, his strength, his action is causing the movement of the wine, and that in and of itself might be what causes the problem here. We'll discuss that in the Gemara. It's not autumn. We have a Mishnah in Taharot. Hanitzok. Vakita freis, umashketo feach, enu chibur, lo lutuma, velo lutara. You have three different types of movements of water or liquid that possibly create a connection between two bodies of water or two liquids. One is a nitzok. A nitzok is a flow. That's when you're pouring out of a utensil into another utensil, pouring out of a pitcher into a cup. The nitzok is the flow of liquid between them. Ketafres is liquid that's moving because it's on an incline. It's on something that is not flat, and therefore that causes the liquid to move along that area. Umashketofeach. Shketofeach is an area that is moist, but we know that it's contrasted with an area that is tofeach amanat piach, which is that it is moist enough that it can moisten something else. So here we're talking about tofeach, where it's simply moist. You touch it, you get the moisture on you, but if you touch something else, it would not transfer that moisture onward. On the other hand, tofeach amanat lafiach, or tofeach latfiach, is where if you touch that moisture, and then you touch something else, that moisture would be sensed or felt on that other item. So here you have these three different types of liquids. Enu chibur lo lutuma velo lutara. They are not a connection for tuma and tara. Let's start with tara. Tara is a case of a mikveh. You have a kosher mikveh that is sitting higher up on the hill. You have a body of water that is lower down on the hill. And you have water that is flowing down the hill. It's moving between the kosher mikveh and the mikveh that's not kosher. That flow of water is not considered to be a chibur. That doesn't create a connection between the two items. And the mikveh kosher remains kosher. The mikveh not kosher remains not kosher. That flow of water does not create a chibur between them. That is true of a nitzok as well. You have somehow have water that is flowing from one item to the other. The two waters will not come together to be mitztaref to create the mikveh. And the same is true if you have moist area between the two bodies of water. That won't make a connection in order for it to be a kosher mikveh. The same is true for tumah. If you have a body of liquid that is tameh and a body of liquid that is tahor, and then there is some sort of connection between them, either because of a flow or because of a nitzok. Let's assume now that obviously it is the tahor item that is flowing towards the tamei, or the tahor item that is being poured towards the tamei. In those cases, there's no chibur for the tumah to then affect the waters that were tahor. Obviously, it was in reverse, and the tamei waters were flowing into the tahor waters. Then you would definitely have a problem because the tamei water is actually touching the tahor waters. But here where the tahor waters are flowing towards the tamei waters, that's not considered to be a chibur. That is not considered to be a connection to send it back up to the areas that are tahor. And similarly, if you have moist area, the way Rashi describes it, if you have a flat area and you have a puddle on one side, a puddle on the other side, and moistness between them, there is no connection between those two puddles just because of the moistness that is there. And if you touch one of them, that will come tamei, not the other. If one of them is tamei, the other one is not tamei.
So in this way, there is no connection with these types of connectors. It does not create a connection between the bodies of water. On the other hand, Hashborin, if you have water that is sitting still, Chibur l'tuma u'l'tara, then in both cases, it is a Chibur l'tuma u'l'tara. And if the Tameh touches one side, it will affect the other side. Or if this is a mikveh that connects between two mikvaot, that will also be a connection that makes them ksherim. So when you have a gathered pool of water that is still, that can create a connection between bodies of water, between tuma and tahara. So that's the difference here. In the first three cases, you have two of the three items are flowing. That's why they do not create the connection. The last one is just not enough liquid to create the connection because it's only moist, not moist enough to moisten other items. On the other hand, if you have something that's still body of water, it will connect to create the connection. Or if you have tofeach, amanatat piach, if the moistness is significant enough that if you touched it, then you can pass that moistness to something else, that becomes a still piece of water then because it's moist enough that's considered to be a liquid that attaches between the two items. So now, Amar Rav Huna, the reason we're bringing this Mishnah down is because Rav Huna makes a diuk. Nitzok, v'ketafreis, u'mashket tofeach, chibur le'inyan yayin nesech. That is true by tuma and tahara, that they are not considered to be a connection. But for yayin nesech, they are considered to be a connection. Amar le Rav Nachman, Rav Huna, menalacha. Where do you know that from? How do you know that that is uniquely associated with tuma and tahara and doesn't have the same rules by yayin nesech? If you say it's because of our Mishnah, the Mishnah that we just brought, Nitzok Vaketafres, Umashketofeach, Eno Chibur Lolu Tuma Velo Tadara, they're not considered to be a connection between Tuma and Tara, and you're gonna make a deal. The Tuma Latarahu Dolo Havi Chibur, the Tuma and Tara, they're not considered to be a connection. Hale in Yanai Nesech Havi Chibur, since it only mentions Tuma and Tara, you're implying that Yain Nesech is not bound by these rules and would be a chibur. Ema seifa. What do you do with the latter half of the Mishnah? Ashborin chibur de tuma or the tahara. Still water or pooled water is considered to be a chibur for tuma and tahara. From that you can be midayik. The tuma and tahara hu davi chibur alinyan nesech lo avi chibur. You can make a deal that that works for tuma and tahara, doesn't work for yayin nesech. That gives you in a sense an absurdity by which the yayin nesech will have the exact opposite din of tuma and tahara, and that is counterintuitive. And so what you're seeing is your diuk at the Mishnah would be incorrect. Clearly from that Mishnah, you can't come to any conclusion with regards to yayin nesech. Tznan, our Mishnah. Natala mashpech umadad toksel chito shel obei kochavim. He took the funnel, and he used the funnel to measure or to pour wine into the flask of the non-Jew. Bechazar umadad toksel chito shel Yisrael. And right afterwards, without cleaning it, without doing anything else, he goes straight over to the juice flask and starts to do the similar thing to the juice flask. If it still has some residual wine in it, or like we saw before, it has some residual moisture flavor in it, asur ha akavat yayin bavai kamitasro. Why is it that the wine in the funnel is asur? When you were pouring the wine through the funnel into the non-Jew's flask, you're pouring the wine that's being poured goes into the funnel, and then the funnel drains into the flask. So over there, you have no reason to believe that the wine in the funnel is problematic, because the wine in the funnel never touched any yayin nesech. So why are you saying to me that the residual in the funnel is now going to affect the Jew's tzlochit? So the answer must be, la benitzok, must be that it was through the connection of a flow, which is that we connect between the funnel and the wine that is in the flask of the Ovei Kochavim. You're pouring from the Jew's wine. That's totally tor, totally fine. It enters into the funnel. Let's assume that he stopped pouring and now the funnel is starting to drain down into the flask. As it drains down into the flask, when it hits the bottom, then it's now sitting with other yayin nesach that was already there, or residual of yayin nesach that's there. The connection between that and what's above is this flow, the nitzok. And that's my proof that nitzok is a connection by yayin nesach. Shmamina, nitzok, chibur. From here you would conclude that a nitzok, or a pouring flow, is considered to be a chibur. Not a chibur for the fact that that which is coming will end up down there, but it means that that which is below will affect that which is above. Meaning that there'll be a recoil on the flow line, which is that the tuma down below will now affect the wine that is above. So the Gemara says, Tani Rabbi Chiya, in his Mishnah, or in his Braita, explained the reason behind this Mishnah by the funnel, why the residual wine there was problematic. That is because it reached the top. You use a funnel to fill up a bottle. So you start pouring into the funnel drains into the bottle. At a certain point, the level of liquid in the bottle reaches the bottom of the funnel. And in that way, now the wine or the liquid that is in the funnel is actually now completely attached to the wine that is down below. Because you filled it to the point where the liquids reached the funnel. And that's what it means, pachasto tzlochito, that he filled it to the point where the wine in the goy's flask now reached the level of the mashpech. Now you pull out the mashpech, the funnel, and you go put it in the Jew's flask. The wine that was in there was mechubar, connected directly to the wine of the goy. And in that case, the wine that's inside there is yayin nesach, not because of nitzok, not because of the flow, because literally it was attached to the wine that was inside the flask of the non-Jew. The Baal Tosfot say, Rabbi Chiya gives a good explanation for the Mishnah to avoid the problem of nitzok mechubar, but on the other hand, he makes the Mishnah into something that's so simple now that what would have been the Havamin otherwise. Of course, if you fill with a funnel and the liquid rises all the way up to the point of the funnel, then the wine or any liquid that was in the funnel is problematic because it was attached to that which is in the flask of the non-Jew. Any wine that's there has clearly been attached to the Yayin Nesach that was found at the base of this non-Jew's flask, and of course it's going to be problematic. And that's what Tosafot says over here. Bim tomar pshita. What do you mean? There's no chiddush anymore. Tosafot says that the chiddush here is, even if no wine stays in the funnel, it is still asur. The mere moisture that is found in the funnel is enough to cause you a problem when you go and use the funnel for the Jew's wine. So even if there's no wine left, just moisture left in there, that will make it asur. Now that's really based on the previous Tosafot. The previous Tosafot said, why do you need the wine that is residue in the mashpech to cause the problem? The mashpech itself should be a problem, because the Gemara is going to say in Daf Ayin Dalet that you have to dry off the utensil. You have to dry out the mashpech, the funnel, otherwise it's a problem of Yayin Nesech. So now, if you have to dry it off, then why do you actually need residue of wine? Simply being moist or simply not cleaning it out properly would cause you a problem. So now the Rabbeinu Tam at first speculated and said that later on Daf Ayin Dalet, they're speaking about a earthenware funnel that absorbs a lot. And that's why you need gold. That's why you need to dry it out and clean it out. Our Gemara is talking about a funnel that's made out of wood that does not absorb so much. And that's why over here you need actual residue of wine and not simply that the wine was used in the mashpech, and now you have to do nigov, which is a process we'll get to in the Gemara and Daf Ayin Dalet. So then, v'shuv chazar bo Rabbeinu Tam. From here you can see how alive the halacha process is that Rabbeinu Tam is trying to explain this, and first gives a reason trying to differentiate, and then he says, you know what, I'm wrong about this. Da'achav ha'otam shalitz. They're both talking about wooden utensils. El the common mari b'etshim yuchad tashmin shel shel ovdei kochavim. That the etz or the mashpech, the funnel, whatever item that we're using further on, was something that was designated for the use of the Ovdei Kochavim. It was a utensil that they used over and over and over again. In that case, it has time, and it has enough liquid to absorb significantly. That's why it needs niguf. That's why it needs drying out and cleansing. On the other hand, here, we're talking about the Jew's funnel that was used this one time, and it happened to be that it went into the non-Jew's flask and rose up, and now it's touching, or through the chibur of nitzuk, it's causing you a problem in the funnel. But that is not significant enough absorption. Therefore, lo gozru be rabbonon. The Rabbanan would not go there in that case to say that you have to do niguv. And even though the Gemara on Daf Dayan Dalet is going to say that even items that are used only one time require this cleansing process, there is a differentiation the Gemara makes there between kelim that go into storage, where they were gozer, versus kelim that do not go into storage, where they did not make gzeira when it was only used one time. In the case of the funnel, it's a case of an item that's used one time here, and it's not something that's put into storage, meaning that you don't store wine in it, you don't store yayin nesach in it, and therefore it will be exempt from the gzeirat chachamim. And so then, based on that, this next Tosafot gives you that chiddush, that even though there's no wine left in it, still that is a problem when the wine rose to that level, it is a problem, and you can't use it again, even though there's no actual wine left there, but simply you use this mashpech and now it has absorption or moisture from the original pouring, that's enough to make it asur to use for the Yisrael as well. So based on Rabbi Chiya's explanation of the Mishnah, it sounds like that if the wine rose to the level of the funnel, that's what the problem is. What is the conclusion then when it doesn't reach the funnel? Wouldn't you then conclude that means that a nitzok, a flow of liquid, is not considered to be a connection? That before you wanted to come to the conclusion from the Mishnah that a nitzok, a flow of liquid, is considered to be a chibur, because that's the only way you could get it back up to the funnel. Now if you tell me the way you got it back up to the funnel is that the actual wine rose to the level of the funnel, that implies that if it didn't rise to the level of the funnel, it would not be problematic. That means you would conclude then that a chibur, a nitzok, is not a chibur, that a flow is not considered to be a connection. And now you're going to conclude just the opposite. The Gemara says, "Lo, pachas tots lo chito, tifshot lechod asur." We know for sure if the wine rises to the level of the funnel, that is makes it asur. And if you use it now for these rolls flask, it's going to be problematic. Nitzok tibayi. When it comes to a flow, we're not sure what the halach is. Don't be mimidayek out of that something else. It itself is the chiddush. The chiddush is that when it rises to the level of the funnel, it's problematic. As the Baal Tosafot say, even if there's no yayin left in the funnel, it's still problematic if you use it again for the Jew's flask right afterwards. But as far as Nitzok is concerned, we have no opinion here, and it still remains a question. Tashma. So this is the latter case in our Mishnah. He's pouring from one utensil to the other. Et shemareh mimenu mutar. That which he pours from is mutar. Ha beni debeni asur. The wine along the continuum would be asur. Shmamina nitzok chibur. Again, here you would seem to conclude that the flow is considered to be a connection. So as far as the utensil above, we're saying that the wine in it will be mutar. But that wine that is flowing from the upper utensil to the lower utensil, not only will the wine or the liquid in the lower utensil be problematic, everything along that continuum of flow would be problematic. The nafkamina would be if you swung your hand through it, or you took something through it and caught that which was flowing in the midstream, it would still be problematic. You see from that, the nitzok is a chibur. Where it says, even nitzok chibur, if the flow is considered to be a connection, then afilu de gavei de mono nami litzar. Then even the stuff up top should be asur. If you're pouring from one utensil to a lower utensil, then not only should the flow be a connection for itself, it should connect it up to whatever liquids in the upper utensil. And that means it should be tamei or yayin nesach, all the way from the liquid at the bottom, all the way up to the liquid in the top utensil. So Gemara says, "Halo kasho." That's not a problem. Dekam maktif kitufe. That is because he does it in a stuttered, stepped manner. What he ends up doing is pouring, stopping, pouring, stopping, pouring, stopping. Before whatever flow reaches the bottom or touches the utensil below, it's already detached from the utensil above. Then the only question is about the nitzok itself, not about the upper utensil. And in that way, the upper utensil remains mutar. The lower utensil, of course, anything that's in there is asur, because there's yayin nesach in there. The only question is about the nitzok. And it seems from our Mishnah that the nitzok is asur, because you're saying that the utensil above is mutar, but that implies that the flow itself is asur. And that means that nitzok is a chibur. Gemara says, u'tameich ema seifa. According to your reasoning, what are you going to do about the seifa? Et she'ir le'tocho hu da'asir. You make a deal out of the fact that the upper utensil is mutar. That implies that the nitzok is asur. But you can make the same but opposite deal out of the seifa, which is the utensil into which the wine pours is asur. Had the beni beni shari. That means the flow until it reaches the base of that utensil is mutar. Elamiha leka lamashamimina. From our Mishnah, you cannot come to any conclusion. Because it tells you what the status of the upper utensil is, tells you what the status of the lower utensil is, never tells you what the status of the nitzok is, and your deal goes in either direction, and from there you can't conclude what is the din of a nitzok. So now, tashma, hame'areh michavit lebor. He's pouring from a barrel utensil into the collection vat. Kiluach hayoreh misfat hachavit lemata asur. Whatever is in that flow from the exiting of the upper utensil until it reaches down to the vat is considered to be asur. What we're thinking is that the bor or the vat down below has Yayin Nesech in it, and then he's pouring wine out of a utensil that doesn't have Yayin Nesech in it. And then the Brayta is telling us, when you're pouring from the Chavit into the Bor, any liquid that's along that continuum is problematic, is a sur. So that would seem to show you that Nitzok is a Chibor, because yes, the wine down below is already a sur. The wine in the utensil above, which says Mutar, and anything that's in the flow is considered to be a sur. Now again, here, if you believe that Nitzok is a chibur, which is the conclusion the Gemara would want to come to, based on this, we'd have to say that it's tufek tafe. It's a case where he's pouring and stopping, because otherwise, why aren't the liquids in the upper utensil also problematic? Targum Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet over here came and explained this braita by saying that you're not explaining it properly. It's be'ovid kochavim hame'are. It's a case where it's a non-Jew pouring the wine. The ati mikocho, that comes from his strength, his force, e ovei kochavim ha-me'are, if it's a goy that's pouring, afilu gava de chavita nami mitzar, then shouldn't even the stuff inside the utensil be asur? If it's a Jew pouring, the problem is the vat down below is yayin nesech, and then it's recoiling back up the flow, and it's affecting the flow itself to become yayin nesech. That which is in the barrel is not affected by that. Again, probably because of the fact that he's stopping before the nitzok touches the vat. On the other hand, if you have a goy is pouring is generating the yayin nesek. It's not that there's yayin nesek in the vat. He's the one actually making the yayin nesek by pouring it. If he's making the yayin nesek by pouring it, why is it just the wine that exited that is considered to be yayin nesek? Even the wine inside the utensil should be considered to be yayin nesek. Mar says, koach, dove kochavim midrabananu da'asir. When the goy is doing it through his force or through his strength, that's only a restriction midrabanan. How the nafak the bray gazru be rabbanan? That which exits the kli, the rabbanan would goes on it to give it the status of yayin nesef. How the gavai lo gazru be rabbanan? That which is internal to the unit or to the utensil is not considered to be yayin nesef. We spoke about this earlier in the Masechta, because that actually gives you something that is seemingly ludicrous. The Torah describes yayin nesech, wine libations, as something that comes from a utensil and is poured onto the mizbeach or onto the pipes on the mizbeach. So your classic case of nisuch is nisuch through a kli. Yet, what the Gemara is telling you here, and again when we discussed it earlier, is that nisuch through a kli is only nisuch derabanan. Yayin nesech is when the goy comes into contact with it and does some sort of shikshuk in there, that creates the yayin nesech midoraita. So as opposed to the Torah's prescription of nisuch hayayin, which is through a kli, the nisuch hayayin that's been described in our Masechta comes from mangel. And according to this, nisuch hayayin midoraita is only when the goy comes into contact with the wine. When he's pouring the wine from utensil, the Gemara here tells you it's only a nisuch derabanan. That shows you that the dynamic of yayin nesech had changed over time, and that the Gemara is worrying about a different form of Yayin Nesech than that is which is described in the Torah. And even though the paradigms of Avoda come from the Torah, nevertheless the Chachamim saw in their time that that was not the way that the Nisuch HaYayin was being performed. And therefore the Isur was associated with touching and not with pouring. And the Gemara in that way answers the problem again, and says that Nisuch is not a Chibur, but rather, this is a case of koach avoid kochavim, which is nisuch derabanan, and you can't prove anything about nitzuk chibur. Amalo, the Rav Chista lahanu suvyata. Rav Chista said too, again, the suvyata are mochre yain, the sellers of wine. Ki kailitu chamra lobde kochavim. When you pour wine for the non-Jews, katve ktufe. Do it in a stuttered manner. Inami nafse nifutse. Or, you should stand from far away and throw it or toss the wine towards his utensil. What he's trying to prevent is a nitzok, having the flow of wine be continuous. The Gemara here ends with regards to this issue of nitzok. And clearly here you have a machloket in the Amoraim as to whether nitzok is a chibur or not. And the question is how to paskin. And once again we're enlightened in the Masechet Avodah Zarah as to the life in northern France where Rashi lived and the Balei HaTosafot lived, where this halacha is so relevant to them. Here in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, we've never heard Rashi give so many piskei halacha that are quoted in the Balei HaTosafot. Once again here, we have a psak halacha from Rashi. Rashi writes, Over here, v'alocha k'rav sheshet. Alocha here is like Rav Sheshet, she'en adam choluk alav. Because nobody argues on Rav Sheshet, which means that the pouring by koach of oid kuchavim, that which exits the utensil is asur, that which stays inside of the utensil is asur. And then, the svirle nitzil chibur, that over here, we believe, based on the statement of Rav Chista, that nitzok is a chibur, v'chein alocha. And that's also v'alocha. So he passes like Rav Sheshet, and he passes like Rav Chista over here, who was the last statement that told the wine sellers to do it in a stuttered pouring or to throw the wine so that there is no nitzok. That implies that nitzok is a chibur. And Rashi says, v'chein alocha, nitzok is considered to be a chibur. And lo and behold, like many of the other times that we saw this in the Balei Tosafot, his grandson, the Rabbeinu Tam, argues on his grandfather and says that that's not right. The locha is that nitzok ainu chibur. It's not a chibur. And even though Rav Chista says that nitzok is chibur, nevertheless, Rav Sheshet, the previous statement, argues on him. He's a batra. Sheshet is a later amora. We ask him like the batra when it comes to amoraim. And Rav Sheshet just explained that that statement before of the Gemara about the flow of wine going into the collection vat wasn't about a nitzok problem, it was about a koach of ovdei kochavim. The fact that he explained it that way shows that he doesn't think that nitzok is a chibur. So that's one reason not to paskin like him. And then he says, v'chein mar zutra, batroho, will say coming up in the Gemara, we're going to do a case here, that again, a kenishkanin, which is similar in nature to this, also is mutar, even though there's a chibur, there's a nitzok that's there. And he says that Rabbi Chia, when he explained the Mishnah, explained it as being a case where the wine rose to the funnel, and not a case of nitzok. So he also believes that nitzok is no chibur. And he says that Rav Huna also agrees with this. Rav Huna, who made a diuk originally, and said that nitzok v'kata freis, umashketo feach, are chibur le'ayin yayin nesech, all of those are considered to be a chibur for Yayin Nesech, not for Tuma and Tara. The Balei Tosafot say clearly, even by Yayin Nesech, Tofeach, just moist items are not a chibur and it doesn't make it to Yayin Nesech. So if his diuk or his statement is untrue about the Mashket Tofeach, it must be untrue about the Nitzok and Katafreis. And then it's even Rav Huna is undermined, La Halacha. And then he says that Rav Huna was Chazarba, that he retracted that position of feeling that nitzok is a chibur. And in addition, Rabbeinu Tam says that the Gemara, whenever it comes across something that has a nitzok in it, and the conclusion of the simple reading of whatever it is would come to the conclusion that nitzok is a chibur, the Gemara says, Shma Mina, like we did at the top of the second Amud, nitzok chibur. You must conclude from this that nitzok is a chibur. When the Gemara does that, it's saying that because it doesn't like that conclusion. It's saying that you realize that if you're going to read it that way, nitzok is a chibur. And then the Gemara will come along and try to undermine that or change that. The fact that the Gemara poses it in that fashion, not as a conclusion, but rather as a conclusion that needs to be questioned, shows you that the Gemara is not comfortable with nitzok being a chibur. And for that reason as well, the Rabbeinu Tam paskins that nitzok is not a chibur. And the last thing is, the answer that the Gemara gave to Rabbi Chia, who said that the cases where the wine rose to the funnel, and then the Gemara said, well, let's conclude from that that nitzok is not a chibur. The Gemara came back and said, no, you don't have to say that. Maybe it just means that we don't know about nitzok. He says that was duchaka. The Gemara did that, but duchak, just to protect the other position. But the simple reading of Rabbi Chia is that there is no nitzok over here. For that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam paskins against his grandfather and says that nitzok ain't no chibur. It's not considered to be a chibur. And so listen to now the Pesach Halacha of the Balei Tosafot based on this. V'hashta b'mokum sheish hefzeh gadol, in a place where there's high monetary loss from nitzok being a chibur, then yesh l'smocha divi rabbeinu tam nahatir magak kovei chavim ayidei nitzok, to be matir the connection of an ovei kovim through a nitzok, aval behefzeh mu'at, where there's a small monetary loss or a small loss involved, yachol l'chachmir k'divi rashi. You should be machmir like Rashi. So he basically says, if you're in a bind and it's going to cause tremendous monetary loss, then we'll paskin like Rabbeinu Tam. If that's not the case, then we'll opt to paskin like Rashi, lo kumra. Amnam, im mashach yayin min hachavit, l'tok kli, sheyesh bo yayin nesech, im yesh b'chavit shishim min hayayin shebekli, sheyesh bo nesech, v'adai mutar hafilu mandamar nitzok chibur. He says, one corollary to this is, that if you're pouring wine or you're drawing wine from a chavit or a utensil that has wine in it to a utensil that has yayin nesach in it, if there is 60 times the amount of wine in the one that is going into the yayin nesach, then there's no problem. And he says that is because even if they were literally mixed together, we know by stam yenom that the din is that it can be mutal 60 to 1. It's one of the differences between yayin nesach and stam yenom. Stam yenom is mevutal in note tam, whereas yayin nesach is not mevutal at all, not even bemashu. So here, where it's stam yenom that we're speaking about, then stam yenom, where you're pouring from a utensil that's 60 times whatever is down below, then in that case it will be mevatalit. And if it's mevatal, if it's literally mixed, then if it's just connected through a nitzel, then for sure that should also be mevutal how you did the 60 times. So that is the one kula. But that assumes Shayaz Batob Shishim Stam Yenim Kamosha Perish Rabbeinu Tam. That's the Rabbeinu Tam's Shita that Stam Yenim is Batob Shishim. Then you have to add on top of that that the Bali Tosavot believe that all Yayin in our day is Stam Yenim and not Yayin Nesech, because the Goyim don't know Tim Shel Nisuch HaYayin. That's the case. The Nisuch Chibor will rarely be a real issue, because usually the quantity of wine coming from the utensil that is Mutar will far exceed whatever is down below. If it doesn't, then you'll have a problem because of Rashi's din of Nitzel Chibur, and will be Machmir if it's not a Hefseid Merubah. Alright, next part of the Gemara. Anaru Rava Lahanu Shfokai. So Rava said to these wine pourers who were Jewish, Kish Fakitu Chamra, when you are pouring the wine, Loli Kari Vovi Kochvim Lesayeh Bahadaichu. Don't let the non-Jew help you with the pouring of the wine. Dilma Mishtalitu. Maybe you will forget yourselves. Maybe you will slip off. Maybe something will happen. Vishaditu Leale. And then the goy will be carrying all of the burden. Vikati Mikoko. And then the wine will be pouring because of his interference, his force, his koach. Vasir. And then it would be problematic. We already discussed this earlier in the Masechta, in the Bali Tosafot and Daf Samach Amud Aleph, where there the Bali Tosafot discussed about the situation where the Jew was pouring from the pitcher into the barrel, or vice versa, the goy was pouring into the Jew's barrel. And there we said that when it's being poured by the non-Jew, it's obviously problematic because of kochol. Then we spoke about the lower utensil, and if the goy is there, it could be problematic if it's mitzadeh. If it's in any way helping to facilitate the pouring, then it was always so problematic. The Bali Tosafot over there said, that means that that is only in the case where both of them are contributing something that the other one couldn't do, which is zeh v'zeh gorein. They're both causing it to happen. Because if one of them can do it alone, and then the other party's helping, that doesn't change the fact that the major party or the primary party is the one doing the work. And when you look in the dinim of Shabbat, when you have zeh yechol la'asot v'zeh yechol la'asot, if each one could have done it independently, then when they come together, there's not a problem because we don't consider the second party that's coming and helping to be doing a full melacha or doing something that is considered to be significant. So that's what the Bali Tosafot say over here, that the Jew, has, or that's what Rava is saying over here. When the Jew is pouring it and the goy is helping him, that would have been fine because the Jew could have done it alone. The problem we have is that he may lose grip on it, or he may forget himself and leave it with the goy, and then the goy is pouring it himself. That's the case, then you have kochol, which we just discussed, isu d'rabanan, it's going to cause the wine that's exiting to be asur. And that's what the Bali Tosfot say over here, and they said it back on Samach Amud Aleph as well. Hilkach yishli zeher b'Yisrael shufech yayin mechavit l'kli acher, shelo yisei obdei kochavim, elim ken Yisrael acher, shisiyeh harbe imo. The only way you can do this is if the Jew is helping significantly. The goy is pouring the wine, and the Jew just comes in and helps a little bit. That's not enough, because the goy could have done it himself. The Jew has to be significantly involved to the point that he could have done it himself, or each one of them independently couldn't have done it. And this is the example that we brought back on Samach Amud Aleph. If you have a barrel on the back of a wagon, and they open up the tap, or they open up the plug, and the wine is flowing out by itself. But we want to increase the flow. So if you tip the wagon, the flow will increase. So if the goy then goes and tips the wagon in order to increase the flow, does that mean now he's pouring it? Or does that mean that he didn't make a difference because it would have flowed without him? And here the Bali Tosafot say, V'lo yari rotze lomar, lo isur, v'lo heter. The Ri, when he heard about this case, Didn't want to be Oseret, didn't want to be Matiret. Didn't want to be Oseret because the flow would have happened without the Goy. Didn't want to be Matiret because the Goy did increase the flow. He did have an impact over here. Bikomagom Nira, but nevertheless, here, Bali Tosfos will bring a conclusion. Back on Samach Aleph, they leave it uncertain. Here they bring the conclusion. Since, irrespective of the Goy's involvement, the wine would have flowed. And all the Goy did was make it flow faster or more easily. Imgain mutar. That is mutar, davi messiah, she'en bo mamash. That's someone who's helping, that is not making an impact. Aval yesh li zaher, you gotta be careful in cases, shkenishar yayin bekuba. In a case where the wine is sitting below the tap level, below the level of the hole, and that you have like with an urn, where you have hot water that's sitting below the tap, you have to tilt the urn in order to get the water out. So here too, if he tips the wagon, in order to get the wine up to the level of the tap or the hole, then mata bekuba b'siyua nar katan Yisrael davi messiah shem b'mash k'damran. Then you have a serious problem because he's then the cause of the flow, and that's considered to be kochol. And what they used to do with him, send one of their kids along with him to help him out to prevent the problem. What the Bali Tosfos would say is that's not going to help you. You send your kid is not strong enough to do it himself, and he's not strong enough to make a difference. It's what's called siyah debo mamash. It's helping that has no real impact. That's not going to save you from the koach of yayin nesech, and therefore the wine is going to be a sword. There you're trying to create a legal loophole by sending the little kid, but that's not going to work because the problem here is kocho, and until you diminish his impact of kocho, it's not going to matter. And that means the Jew has to be significantly involved or strong enough to be significantly involved in order to make a difference that it's not the goy's koach that is creating it. Right? So that was the Bali Tosafot based on Robo's statement. It goes back to the Tosafot and Samach Hanav, who discussed it even more significantly over there. Right? So now the Gemara says, "How gavra ta'asik chamra begishta ubadgishta." There was this individual who created a flow of wine through a siphon. A gishta ubadgishta is a straw and another straw that were connected together. The way that Rashi describes it is they spliced two straws on an angle, and then they sealed them together, and they were pointing down like a triangle. They created a triangle by slicing them on a 45-degree angle. You attach the two 45-degree angles together, and you create a pyramidic type of open pipe, and then you can start the flow. You suck on one end of it, and you put it into the bottom of the barrel until it touches the bottom of the barrel. The wine will continue to flow into the new barrel, or in essence, you're creating the equivalent of a siphon. So this is God that was using a siphon. Ata ubikukavim anachia dea gishto. Ubikukavim came along and put his finger on the siphon. Asrei rova the kule chamra. Rava says, all the wine here is asur. Amrlei rova papa the rova. Vamrlei rova the barmatna the rova. Rav Papa said to Rava, and some say that it was Rav Adar Bar Matna the Rava, Ramila Ravina the Rava, and some say it was Ravina the Rava. But my, what is creating that problem? When the Goy touches the flow of the siphon, or he caps out the siphon with his finger and then releases it again, why is all the wine that's coming from the utensil that is being emptied by the siphon, why is that all asur? Nitzuk, if that is because of the flow, then Shmamino, Nitzuk Chibur. Then from your statement, we're going to conclude that Nitzuk is a Chibur. Flow of Yayin is considered to be attachment, and that's what's causing the Maga, the touch of the Goy, to go all the way back into the other barrel. Where it says, Shani Hotam, Dukuli Chamra, Agishto Bagishto Gorir. That is because by design or by nature, all the wine in the other barrel is going to exit through this siphon. Since it's all going to exit through this siphon, when you touch it, it's going to be as if you have a maga. It's as if you touched it literally. That's the view of Rashi. And Rashi says over here, Rashi says that the siphon is set up in such a way that it reaches all the way to the base of the barrel that you're trying to empty. And that way, the barrel will empty itself through this siphon. That means every drop of wine that is in the barrel that is mutar, until it was siphoned out and touched by this goy, that would have been emptied by the siphon. And that's why Rashi considers the touch of the goy at the exit of the siphon to be as if he touched all the wine inside that barrel, because it would have, by design or of that nature, flowed out. That means it would have been drained, and now he touched it. When he touched it, it's as if he touched all the wine in that barrel. And you can see that very clearly in Rashi's explanation over here. He says, by the siphon, Vavi leke nogeya b'chavit mamash. It's as if he's literally touching the chavit. Davi leke chavit arichta. The siphon makes it as if it's an extended part of the chavit, or in essence, as if he put his finger straight into the barrel. It's the equivalent of him doing that, and that you can see explicitly in Rashi here that the problem is maga. That's what Rashi says over here. If you go back to Daf Nun Tet Amud Bet, there's a very large Tosafot over there, where the Rabbeinu Tam argues on Rashi's explanation of Gishta Ubad Gishta. And there, the Rabbeinu Tam, when he's explaining in that Tosafot, he says that the case of the siphon is not necessarily a case where it reaches to the bottom of the barrel. Mufresh Rabbeinu Tam, Shagishta, the siphon, Lo heita magad the shuleya chavit, did not reach the base of the barrel that he was trying to empty. Vafilu achi ayo ser. And even so, the Gemara says it's asur. Kol mitam garir. Kol ha-yayin ha-chavit mitnaneya bitziyato l'chutz. Because all the wine in the barrel moves when it is exiting out of the piping. So the Rabbeinu Tam argues fundamentally on Rashi's view as to what the problem is here with the siphon. Rashi says the problem with the siphon is nigiyah. When you touch the siphon, and since all the wine from the utensil would have flowed out, when you touch it, as if you touched all the wine inside that barrel because of the fact that it would have flowed out anyway. And so now when you touch it, it's as if you touched everything. And that's why Rashi has to have the siphon touch the bottom of the barrel. Then the Rabbeinu Tam says, who says it's touching the bottom of the barrel? Maybe it's not touching the bottom of the barrel. And yet all the yayin in the other utensil is a sur. Well, why should it be a sur? The siphon will terminate as soon as it reaches the point where it's no longer submerged in the barrel that you're emptying. If that's the case, the wine below that level should not have been a sur. The answer is that it is a sur, according to Rabbeinu Tam, because mitnaneya. Since when the wine goes to leave through the siphon, it moves, that is what's causing the sur here. His touching of the item is what causes the wine to move or stop moving. And that movement is what's considered to be the nigiyah, or the problem over here. And then Rabbeinu Tam uses that to explain the Gemara over there, where Rav Papa says, "Kol dahadei barza chamra asir ve'idach shari." Rashi just spoke about anything below the tap level is mutar because of the fact that you didn't touch it; it wouldn't have flowed anyway. Whereas the Rabbeinu Tam says that's just not the case; that even the stuff below the tap level would have been asur, and he proves it from our Gemara by the siphon. And the Rabbeinu Tam concludes that the loch is not like Rav Papa over there because Rava and our Gemara argues on him, and he explains the case of the siphon to be a case that's equivalent to the case of Rav Papa over there, where the barza, the tap, is somewhere up the level of the barrel. That means that there's wine below the tap that wouldn't have flowed out by itself. And then he creates the same or similar case by the siphon, that it wasn't at the bottom of the barrel. And he shows through that that Rava, his Rebbe, argued on Rav Papa. And based on that, he comes to the conclusion that the halacha should not be like Rav Papa, unlike Rashi's view over here, where the case of Rav Papa is different than the case of Rava. Rav Papa's name had a case of a tap where there's wine below the tap. That is differentiated. Whereas the case over here by Rava is a case where the siphon reaches the bottom of the barrel, and therefore it's a case where they're going to drain the entire barrel. Rav Moshe Mikutzi questioned the psak of the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is making a big assumption that the Gemara that we're reading now in Ayin Bet Amud Bet is a case where it doesn't reach the bottom of the barrel. And who says that's true? And Rashi himself over here explains the case that it's reaching the bottom of the barrel. And therefore you could explain like Rashi that it's a problem of Maga. It's not a problem of Mitnaneya. But there you see a fundamental argument between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam as to what is causing the problem over here. Rashi says it's as if he touched it. Because remember, we just learned that if the goy doesn't touch the yayin and he pours it out or he causes it to move, then that's not considered to be yayin nesech when it's inside the utensil, only when it exits the utensil. Here we're saying something in the utensil is considered to be a sur. So that must be, Rashi says, it's because it's maga. It's deemed to be as if he touched it all, because he touched it at the exit point, and all the wine would have flowed through there anyway. So it's as if he touched everything in the barrel. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, the reason is, it's because as if he moved all the items in the other barrel, when he put his finger on there, because when the wine moves to leave or goes through the siphon, that's considered to be a movement or a pouring in a sense of the wine. When he touches it, it affects everything that's in there. The nafkamina between them will be, if the siphon doesn't reach the bottom of the barrel. According to Rashi, then anything below the level of the siphon would be mutar. According to Rabbeinu Tam, even the wine below the level of the siphon would be asur. Right, so now, Amar Marzutra, Breder of Nachman, Kanish Kanin, Shori. Kanish Kanin are mutar. Kanish Kanin was a utensil that had a number of pipes coming out of it. You have to think of it as a pitcher, that from the base, there are these pipes that come upwards out of it. All these pipes coming out, which would be like straws. And what you could do is you can have people sit around this pitcher or this utensil with wine in it. They used to pour it in. And then everybody would go around and take their pipe and start to drink as if they had their straw out of this Kanish Kanin. Bahani Milei, that's only true, the Kodim Pasuk Yisrael. The Jews stopped drinking first. But Kodim Pasuk Obed Kulavim, lo. If the non-Jews stopped first, then it would be problematic. So what you see from here, and this is one of the proofs that the Rabbeinu Tam brought before, that Nitzuk is not a chibur. And that is over here, you have a number of people sitting around this utensil, drinking the wine. Can't imagine this, that this was very, very sanitary way to drink, but nevertheless it was the practice in their day. So they're drinking from around this utensil. The Jew is drinking, at the same time the Obed Kochavim is drinking. So now, technically, you have a chibur through a nitzok. The Obed Kochavim is sucking on his straw, means that he has mag over there. The Jew is sucking on his straw, he has mag over there. The wine should be asur. That's one of the reasons that Rabbeinu Tam says that nitzok is not a chibur. You can prove it because Marzutra over here also agrees that nitzok's not a chibur. But Marzutra qualifies his statement and says that this all works as long as the Jew stops drinking before the goy stops drinking. Because if you think about a straw, as long as there's suction on the straw, the liquid goes up. As soon as you release the straw, then the liquid in that straw goes down, and you have what the equivalent of colloquially is called backwash. Meaning that whatever was in the mouth or touching the mouth of the goy now goes back down the straw. So now, if the goy stops first, that means that whatever he was touching now retreats back into the pitcher. And the Jew's drinking on the other side now is drinking something that has the Yayin Nesach mixed into it. So as long as the Jew stops drinking first, and there's a goy drinking on the other side, he's fine, because as long as the goy is creating a suction, nothing from him is going back into the pitcher, it's all exiting the pitcher, and it's not a problem. As soon as the goy stops, then you have something that is reversing or retreating into the pitcher, that becomes problematic, and if the Jew is drinking at that point, he's drinking Yayin Nesach. So, the Jew can drink along with the goy as long as he could stops drinking before the goy stops drinking. It's interesting that they allowed this practice, despite the fact that this seems to be your classic case of Shum Benotehem. This is a classic case of socialization, or a case which would allow a Jew and a non-Jew to be drinking from the same utensil. Seemed to me that that would be your case where you'd want to make it asur, irrespective of the legalities that would make it a sword, just because of the socialization aspect. Aside from the fact that there's huge risk involved, which is that if you do drink with a guy, then you have to make sure that you stop before. So it's like a game of Russian roulette. You always have to make sure you stop before he stops. It's very hard to know when he's going to stop for you to stop. Nevertheless, they made it mutar. Rabbi Ravuna ikulavei reish galuto. Rabbi Ravuna went to the house of the exilarch. Sharulo the Mishtab and Kanishkanim, and he mismatter them to drink from this utensil. Igadami Rabba Baravuna Gufe Ishte Bekanishkanim. And some say that not only was he matter for them, but he himself actually drank from it. And that's what the Bali Tosfot would say over here, that even if you want to say that it's mutar, it's still very risky. And so why was Rabba Baravuna doing this, or entering into this game of risk? And the Bali Tosfot would bring over here, Upeirish Rach, the Bali Tosafot qualify this and say that if Rabbi Bar Hanan himself was drinking from this, he did it not with a non-Jew, but with a Jew. So then what's the Chiddush? You could do it today, even post the Qurban, as opposed to the view in the Gemara and Shabbat, that it's a sur b'zmanazeh, because it's considered to be simcha, and it would be inappropriate post the Qurban to have such a simcha. It's not considered to be a simcha that is contradiction or in conflict with Qurban HaBayit. So what's interesting is the Bayit Tosfot are sensing the problem here, which is Rabbi Rav Huna's drinking along with the goy, and that's the only din that's being taught here, not the din that we would have thought, which is that he was drinking with the goy, because the Bali Tosafot are uncomfortable saying that Rabbi Rav Huna was drinking along with the goy. That would also shed light maybe on the heter that was given by Rabbi Rav Huna to the Reish Galuta, that he did it for political expedience, meaning that he allowed them to do it because that was done in political settings and they needed that heter. But for lay people on a regular basis, he may not have been matir because of the risks that were involved. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph.